This podcast has been edited for clarity and brevity. Enjoy. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. A 22-year-old rower from Norwich, Vermont, is headed to the Summer Olympics. Billy Bender will tell us about his journey from rowing at Hanover High School to qualifying for the biggest competition in the world. But first, we are focusing most of our time together today on education. Vermont is in the midst of a statewide tax revolt. Property taxes are estimated to increase by double digits. Property taxes pay for our public schools. Since town meeting day, 98 school districts in Vermont have won voter approval for their budget, but about two dozen still don't have a green light. On top of all of this, Vermont's Department of Education has been in a state of upheaval since the Senate voted against confirming Governor Phil Scott's pick for Education Secretary, Zoe Saunders. In a bit, we'll talk with a school principal and hear from a teacher who both work at schools where the budgets have failed. They'll tell us how it's affecting morale and their school's plans for next year. But first, we are joined by Lola Dufour. She's Vermont Public's education reporter, and she's been following the school budgets and education secretary appointment very closely. Lola, welcome back.
Hey, Michaela. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Let's kick things off with the education secretary. There was a year-long search for a new head of the state's education department. Governor Phil Scott appointed a school administrator from Florida with a background in charter school management named Zoe Saunders. She moved up here. She started the job. And then what happened?
Well, basically, the entire public school establishment kind of lined up in opposition to her appointment. So the teachers union, but also superintendents, principals, school boards, and a lot of rank and file educators. I was surprised just like in my daily life with the number of like texts I got from people who do not follow the news, who were really concerned about this. Her appointment ultimately came up for a vote in the Senate, which has the responsibility to advise and consent on certain gubernatorial appointments, and they overwhelmingly rejected her appointment, 19-9. But that's not where it ended.
Tell us more.
Yeah, so within minutes of the Senate's vote, which at that point was sort of, people kind of knew where the vote was going to go. So within moments of that happening, Governor Phil Scott sent out a press release saying, well, now she is Vermont's interim education secretary, and interim gubernatorial appointments are not subject to legislative confirmation. So he basically said, well, the Senate has had its say, and I have found this loophole, which circumvents what they have to say.
Yeah, I was watching my inbox when all this vote was taking place. I remember kind of getting those press releases back to back, one saying that the Senate had voted down Zoe Saunders' confirmation, another one from Governor Phil Scott's office congratulating her on her appointment as interim education secretary, and I kind of had to brush up on how that's possible, how this can work. How long is she able to serve as education secretary, even though she was voted down?
I mean, perpetually, indefinitely, and that seems to be the intent. It's possible that once the legislature is no longer in session, he will appoint her as permanent secretary. And, the legislature can't act if they're not in Montpelier. It's possible that he'll also just keep the interim designation so that when they come back in January, they still can't act. For the foreseeable future, she will be Vermont's education secretary.
Well, Lil, I know you've heard lots of different reactions to this issue ever since this vote occurred and Governor Scott appointed her interim secretary. We just got an email from a listener named John in South Stratford with their thoughts about it. You can also email us throughout this hour at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org or call in at 800-639-2211. John writes, Saunders' experience as chief education officer for Fort Lauderdale, where she greatly expanded service for low-income and minority communities, was completely ignored by critics, as was her work with Nashville Promise Neighborhood, an educational reform effort designated to break intergenerational poverty through a continuum of family-centered services. It was disappointing to see this negative organized reaction rather than a thoughtful consideration of her talents and abilities. Now, Lola, John's email makes me just think about the broader upheaval in the world of Vermont education. From the conversations that you've been having with school officials and legislators, how much of this is about the actual education secretary, Zoe Saunders, and how much is it about larger issues in the world of public education in Vermont?
Yeah, that's such a good question. This is definitely, you know, about Saunders and or at least her resume and what people are reading into it. But you're right. This is also absolutely about the larger political context that she has walked into. Trust between the public education field in Vermont and the Phil Scott administration is very low. Folks who work in public education, so, you know, the union and superintendents, school boards, principals, rank and file educators, often perceive Scott as someone who has long been hostile to public schools and generally friendly to the school, to school choice and the private schools in Vermont who rely on the state's voucher system. On top of that, this feels like a really existential moment for Vermont's schools. And so it's not surprising that people would see this appointment of someone that's worked for a long time for a for-profit charter school company as kind of a shot across the bow and really struggle to give her the benefit of the doubt. Hmm. You know, to Saunders' credit, though, I think she understands that her job at this point is going to be to earn the goodwill of the field. A really under-discussed part of this whole story, I think, is how weak the agency of education is functionally. And that's for two reasons. You know, its staffing has been gutted over the years. And also, obviously, local control is a real dynamic. So if she wants to get anything done that's meaningful, she's going to need to get communities on board. On her first day in the job, she sent a letter to educators. And in the last line, she told teachers she looked forward to earning and keeping their trust. You know, to me, the big open question is whether she can succeed in that endeavor.
Mm. Well, lots to follow there, including after the legislative session comes to a close, which is right around the corner. Lola, Vermonters first voted on their district's school budgets on town meeting day, which was 2 months ago at this point. 25 school budgets still haven't passed. Why not?
Taxes. But, you know, I'll note that like a couple actually still haven't held their first votes. But, you know, by and large, what's happening is that school districts are really struggling to get school budgets across the finish line, although there was some good news on Tuesday. The majority of budgets that went before voters, I think there were eight on Tuesday, six of them passed. So that was some good news. But, you know, by and large, schools are trying to balance this message from their voters that, you know, they can't bear such a large hike in property taxes with a lot of costs that they feel are out of their control, you know. The inflation that is probably also contributing to voters' reluctance to approve these budgets are also key cost drivers. So we will have to see how many of them can get across the finish line before July 1st.
And remind us what happens if they don't get across the finish line by July 1st?
Well, then they'll have to borrow in anticipation of taxes to kind of keep the lights on. So that's not a great situation to be in. And they'll just have to keep revising their budgets to get a yes vote from their voters. Mm. Because you really don't have a school budget in Vermont until your voters give it to you.
Well, legislators have been working hard on this issue this session. They're poised to pass a property tax bill to fund school budgets. The current version making its way through the Senate, the yield bill, would get the average tax increase down from 18.5%, which was originally on the table, to 12.5%. What are the levers that lawmakers are trying to pull here to make this happen?
Yeah, there are three big factors at play. One is lawmakers are proposing to raise other taxes to offset property taxes. So there's a surcharge on short-term rentals, and also a tax on cloud software, you know, things like TurboTax. And they're also thinking about using a $25 million surplus. So that's one-time money. To buy down property taxes. And then the third factor is that a lot of school budgets have gone down, and the budgets that have been put back in front of voters have been for, you know, slightly for less. And so overall education spending statewide has also ticked downwards. So those three things together are combining to potentially offer, you know, lower tax increases. You know, 12.5 is still high, but it is still quite different from the 18.5 we were projecting back in December.
Mm. And do you think Governor Scott could veto this bill? Is it have enough support to sustain an override?
Well, the Senate hasn't voted on it yet, so I don't know. And then, you know, the Senate will have to reconcile with the House.
Long way to go.
But yes. It's, you know, it's like we only have 2 days or so left in the session, but it's still forever. But could Governor Scott veto it? Possibly. There's stuff in here that he likes and there's stuff in here that he really doesn't like, right? Like there's new taxes. So we shall see. I think he's holding his press conference as we're speaking. So I don't know what he'll say about it at that point, but I would imagine that that'll be discussed.
Yes, Governor Scott's press conference at midday on Wednesday. Lola, what are the next school budget votes that you're going to be watching closely?
All of them. yeah, there are a number of kind of interesting ones. There were a couple actually that passed, and then, you know, there were petitions for a revote, and then they've subsequently failed. But, you know, I think all 25 that are still left out there.
And we should also note that you just published a story on VermontPublic.org that focuses on Slate Valley Union School District, which is holding its vote tomorrow, right?
Yes, yes. That is one of the ones I will be watching closely. They're on their third vote.
Ooh.
And they're also a district that often struggles to pass a budget even in a good year. They're, you know, a pretty conservative district, and their voters like to demand frugality from their school administrators. So, and you know, there's a lot of apprehension at the local level about whether or not they can make it. So I will be very curious to see what happens there.
Well, Lola, stick with us for just one more minute here, because we do have a call coming in. John in Waterford is on the line. John, you're on the air. Go ahead. Hey, John, can you hear us?
What you said? Yes, I can hear you fine.
Oh, great. Go ahead.
I can hear you. The guest said that the budget isn't approved until it's passed by the voters, but my understanding is if it's never passed, it reverts to 87.5% of the previous budget. Isn't that the case?
Thanks, John. Lola Dufour, education reporter for Vermont Public. Could you clarify what I think he's referring to, what happens if a school budget, if a school district doesn't pass its budget by July 1st?
Yes. Yeah, so what happens at that point is the school district is authorized to borrow up to 87% of its school budget in order to maintain operations, but they can still do that and continue trying for a new budget. It's just that until you get there, the only thing you can use to operate your schools is that 87% that you're allowed to borrow.
Hmm. Education reporter Lola Dufour, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
And you can find Lola's recent article about the school budget vote with a particular focus on Slate Valley Unified Union School District on vermontpublic.org. And speaking of Slate Valley, this morning I spoke with Jared Danio of Rutland. He's a kindergarten and first grade teacher at Fairhaven Grade School, which is in the Slate Valley Unified Union School District. He's also the vice president of his area branch of their local teachers union. And he told us what it has been like to be on the ground in Fairhaven.
It's been a challenging period for our school district and our communities. We've found ourselves in a position where there is a lot of discourse, not only about, you know, fiscal opposition or fiscal concerns related to the budget, but about public education practice as a whole. And it's been really difficult as an educator to separate those two things and respecting those who may have, you know, a fiscal reason to oppose the budget versus some narratives that are out in the community that are a little bit more aggressive in the way that they're attacking the profession and kind of attacking education as a whole.
I'm sure you have conversations with parents, with other folks who do live in the district about all of this. What is that like? I imagine there's a lot of tough feelings there.
Our building principal has a really great rule that we try to operate by here at Fairhaven Grade School, which is to ask questions, to seek understanding. And so that's certainly what we're encouraging our families, our community members, and our voters to do. There is a fair amount of misinformation that has been kind of put out into the public about who we are as kind of a school district and an institution and what it is that we do. And that certainly has seemed to influence voters. And so we are really trying to engage our community. Unfortunately, social media is incredibly accessible. And it is a little bit more difficult to get folks to come to a face-to-face meeting or have a conversation off of the internet. And generally, you know, a face-to-face conversation adds productivity. Online discourse, it's very difficult to change someone's mind on the internet, we found.
And how does all of this affect your day-to-day, your ability to do your job?
It's affecting folks more and more the further that we kind of walk down through this process. Morale is definitely deteriorating vote by vote. I'm an elementary educator, and so there's a great deal of that work that is theatrical. I'm certainly, to an extent, playing a part, and it's hard to do that when you're not feeling particularly valued in your community.
That was Jared Danio, a kindergarten and first grade teacher at Fairhaven Grade School in the Slate Valley Unified Union School District. Slate Valley voters head to the polls on Thursday to vote for a third time on their school budget. We got a couple emails about the upheaval surrounding the leadership of the Agency of Education, Zoe Saunders, during our last segment. Governor Scott appointed Zoe Saunders. The Vermont Senate voted against her confirmation, and then Scott appointed her interim secretary. Robert in Warren writes, I wish the education secretary and the Senate would think of the taxpayer. The conversation on her appointment is all about how she'll work with the education community. What about the taxpayers, the voters, and the people of Vermont? Where do we fall in this? It seems like nowhere. I support Governor Scott and her appointment and hope she can bring some fiscal responsibility to education in Vermont. Dave in Swanton writes, I have always been a big supporter of Governor Scott, but when I listened to Ms. Saunders sidestep and evade almost every question asked of her when she was on Vermont Edition a few weeks ago, I was thoroughly unimpressed. Vermonters deserve leadership who will answer questions honestly, even if you don't necessarily like the answer. Amid all of this, about two dozen school districts have yet to pass their budgets amid widespread concerns over the estimated rise in property taxes, which fund Vermont's public schools. One of those districts is Harwood Unified Union School District. Their budget has been voted down twice. Joining me now is Sam Crotinger. He's the principal of the Warren School, which is part of Harwood Unified. His school is for kids in pre-K through sixth grade. He's worked and lived in Warren for more than 20 years. Sam, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Sam, I know you were out in our green room right now listening to the conversation we just had with our education reporter, Lola Dufour, and as well as the conversation that I had with a teacher, Jared, about how all these conversations, these issues are affecting his work and his colleagues' work. How is it feeling in Warren for you and your teachers?
I would say that I would echo many of the sentiments that Jared was articulating when he's before me on the show. And I think that the biggest piece I'd like to say is that it's hard not to be demoralized. And our challenges in COVID were huge. And it felt like a real victory emerging from COVID. And this feels like just another just terrible setback for us and for our community. And, you know, in my school, 90% of our staff live in the community. So they're taxpayers also, and facing these incredibly foreboding increases in property taxes. I'm one of those as well. And I've had staff come up to me and say I may have to move out of the district. And it's demoralizing. It is causing anxiety for our students. We have students asking teachers if they're going to lose their jobs. And it's frustrating. And I think part of the frustration is a result of not knowing what's next. Mm. This is unprecedented in our district. We have a district that has historically almost always passed its budgets. So this is sort of, it's a new path for us.
Do you understand why people are voting against the budget?
Do I understand? Well, I can echo the sentiments that I hear in the community. I'm obviously very embedded in my community. And I hear a lot of sentiments of a protest vote. I mean, truly, it is the one move that people have to protest these predicted exorbitant increases in property taxes.
So it's a way that they can kind of send a message to the legislature, yes, to the governor's office.
Yes. Let me give you an example. So a very common sentiment would be, I love and always will support the schools here. I am sending my no vote as a protest to Montpelier. Mm. And that is a common narrative that I hear.
Yeah. You said that some of this anxiety around the budgets has trickled down to the students. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? How much do you feel like the average elementary school student is aware of in regards to all this?
Well, you know, students in elementary schools are hyper-observant individuals, and they are bringing back to the classroom what is discussed at the dinner table. And it's a veritable issue right now. You know, I have multiple staff who have talked to me about students who are very concerned, you know, and if you, at the elementary school level, there is such a strong relationship between the excellent teachers that we have and the students. And so there's this genuine, unfiltered empathy that they have. And, you know, in their processing, it seems like, you know, things are really dire.
Yeah. Well, let's go to the phones here. We have a call coming in from Michael in Waterbury. Michael, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm in the Harwood School District, and I was on the school board years ago. I think some of the no votes we're getting, right, as you say, is protests, because we're not finding the real savings, right? Our school district has, what, three elementary schools within 5 miles of each other, and this is the same throughout the state, including, like, Slate Valley. So I wonder if the education secretary is going to be working through some more school college consolidation. And one proposal I have, it's radical, I understand, one school district for the state. Mm. So we can finally, you know, have equality for education throughout the state, you know, equal class sizes, and try to really help the real root cause.
Mm. Michael, yeah, thank you, Michael, for calling in. School consolidation, a issue that's been top of mind for many Vermonters, as well as for legislators and Governor Scott. Sam, you're the principal of Warren School. Are there ever conversations that you're a part of about consolidation in your district?
Yes, and it's not a new conversation. You know, we that caller was correct. We do have a wonderful group of smaller elementary schools, and they are beloved by their communities. And it's very controversial when that topic appears.
Do you have a take on it?
I'm not answering that.
All right. Well, let's go back to the phones. We have Betty in Rutland. Betty, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. Good day, and thank you for taking my call. There is, as far as I can tell, and the people that I have talked to, none of us are against the teachers, or really a number. We want the kids to have an education, but we can't afford this kind of increases. That's the bottom line. And when you can't pay your taxes, you can't pay your taxes. Mm.
Yeah, thank you, Betty, for calling in. Betty seems to be echoing that sentiment that you were talking about earlier, Sam.
Agreed. I mean, property taxes in Vermont are statistically extremely high on the national scale, and I think everyone understands that. Vermont is an expensive place to live, but it's also a really wonderful, incredible place to live that people choose to be here. But that comes with a cost.
What are some of the myths that you've had to bust when talking to members of your community about the school budget?
I feel like I came up with a metaphor driving in today, and that is that I feel like sometimes we collectively, and people involved in education and citizens, I feel like we're all in a pitch black room and we're all touching different parts of the elephant, and our task is to move the elephant, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you're just touching the trunk, you don't know the whole picture, and I feel like that's part of the issue that's happening right now, that I am lucky enough to have a lot of more information than other people have. And obviously, when you don't have the whole picture, you tend to intrinsically backfill. And that seems to be some of the misinformation that I see out there. Some of it truly is not malicious. It's just with the absence of information and people's intent to really want to solve the problem and offer solutions that it comes to misinformation being propagated within the community. So I really try to stay apolitical. I really try to just to be a disseminator of the information so people can make better informed choices and have more successful conversations and problem solving with their friends and neighbors.
Yeah. Well, one thing I found interesting in the reporting done by my colleague Lola Dufour about the Slate Valley School District is that their revised spending plan that's before voters this week, they're about to have their third school budget vote tomorrow, is just about $211,000 less than the original $31 million budget. Really kind of a drop in the pan. I'm wondering what that kind of says to you, you know, somebody who's on the ground in these schools, about like a school district's ability to cut past a certain point. Is there a moment when there's just like there's no more fat to trim?
Without a doubt, and especially in our smaller schools. Like in my school, there is not a single position to be cut. There's no fluff, you know, and I think that is a pretty common narrative around the state. It's the majority in our district, 75% of our budget starts off with salaries and benefits. And you know, when it's a big piece connected to this is the fact that hiring right now in education has never been more challenging. So for example, at the Warren School, 25 years ago, we would advertise an extremely sought after classroom position. We have very low turnover, a school with an excellent reputation, and we would have tens, you know, like maybe 50 applicants. I just advertised and hired successfully for a classroom teacher position. I had 4 applicants that my team was willing to even interview. And it is really challenging. We've lost in the past few years, and this has happened nationally, but we've lost many teachers to the private sector. And that's a veritable concern for us.
Right.
Wow. I do want to say one thing about merging around the district, and that is that I do understand the logic, obviously, and it seems like just a obvious solution. But what's interesting about Vermont is that there are huge areas, geographic areas, and at some point we have to decide, is it okay for a kid to be on the bus for 4 hours, You know, I mean, you can only merge so much before kids have to travel long distances to get to school.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Well, on that note, I think we have another call about consolidation. Dave in Brattleboro is on the line. Dave, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Just a couple of points. One is that the consolidation that was done starting around 2016, it turns out that if you, and this is information from the Vermont Association of School Business Managers. It's not something that I think I noticed in the newspaper. The 85% of the districts that merged, 85% of the districts that defeated budgets were merged districts. 85% of the merged districts defeated the budgets, and only 34% of towns defeated their budgets. It was the merged districts that are not satisfied with the education that they're getting, and they're not satisfied with the costs, which are the things that were supposed to come from merging. And the problem is that merger is the answer among the elite in Montpelier, but there are other things like community schools, where the schools will do things like have multi-grade classrooms, instead of having small classrooms, have larger groups, multi-grade, and having medical services and having human services and healthcare and senior centers and all sorts of other resources in the school buildings. They use those buildings rather than close them and put those kids on the bus. And rather than have a big divisive fight all over again about which, you know, who should we merge next, because the first one didn't work, so let's do it worse, let's do it harder, is that we need to have a conversation about what do we want from our schools. And that's something that the House Education and Ways and Means Committee promoted in a bill that the Senate, unfortunately, right now, this minute, is tearing apart and weakening and making another insider plan job that's gone wrong so many times in the past.
Dave, thank you so much for calling in. And we are going to have a whole entire other Vermont Edition show about these conversations around school consolidation. But thank you. I hear your points, and we'll keep track of that bill that you mentioned as well. Let's go to Kathleen next. Kathleen, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I have heard from people all around the state, many of the school districts and many of the counties, that we agreed to Act 60 in 1997. We agreed to Act 46 in 2015, and this year we've got Act 127. And if each one of these acts was as good as it was touted to be when we all agreed to it or had it delivered to us, why has it all failed? We're always going after equity. We're always going after savings, one act after another. They all fail. And why should the voters back Act 127? If they were such good products, why did they fall short of solving the problem?
Mm. Yeah, Kathleen, thank you. We're here with Sam Crotinger, the principal of the Warren School. Sam, we're just hearing a lot of distrust, a lot of concern about the policies that legislators are making to fund our school system. You're in that school system right now. What do you want folks to know about how these issues are affecting people on the ground, you and your teachers?
Well, I think primarily teachers are always focused on what they do best, which is educating our students. And the quality of education that we have in Vermont is 100% predicated upon just having excellent teachers. So I think obviously that's a primary focus. But when you're wearing two hats, like I mentioned, 90% of my staff live in the community and are taxpayers and are facing the same financial struggles that everyone has been speaking about. It's a big issue, and it's a complex issue. And I think the history of education funding in this state is complex and complicated. The formula is beyond complicated, and it's almost impossible to relay to someone who's not immersed in this work all the time.
Yeah. Well, let's take one more call here. Paco is in Sharon, Vermont. Paco, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Good morning or afternoon, Michaela and Sam. One question or one kind of comment. The principal just was saying how difficult it is to hire positions at his school and in his school district. And then he was also saying, you know, right off the bat, that 75% of the expenses at that school go directly to salary and benefits. You know, a lot of those are union contracted. You can't change those each year. I understand that. But, you know, when you look at Vermont compared to every other state, what's like our teacher salaries seem kind of middle of the pack, maybe even low. But the staffing levels are just extremely, you know, the staffing this pupil rate shows are extremely high. So why do we need to fill all these positions? Aren't there just efficiencies of, you know, reduce, especially if you look over where we were before Act 60, you know, the staffing per student has just gone straight up a mountain. And is, you know, why can't we staff these schools, maybe not even close schools, but just keep a lot of these open positions, not fill them? Because as a
right. Thank you, Baco. I'm going to jump in here. I only want Tim, you to speak for your own school, for Warren. Are there positions to cut?
There are no positions to cut unless you want a class with 47 kids. You know, I mean, I think that you can make the argument for looking at staffing when you're in a much, much larger school. But I think when you're in a school of my size, we have one teacher to one class. And then you have the space issue. And I think, you know, one of the things I know that's very frustrating for community members and staff in my district is that we have multiple buildings with deferred maintenance that can has been kicked down the road over and over again. And that we have in our district, we've had two failed bond votes to bring our high school, which is in desperate need of updates and renovation. And they have both failed. And so there's that looming over the whole picture as well. It's really frustrating.
Yeah. Well, a lot to keep an eye on here. We'll keep track of what goes on in your district in the upcoming vote as well. Sam Crotinger is the principal of the Warren School in Washington County. It's part of Harwood Unified Union School District. Sam, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
I know you got to get back to school.
I sure
thanks for coming into the studio and being with us today.